So this is Karen Brewster, and today is November 3rd, 2021, and I'm here with Lee Pileski in Seward, Alaska, and this is for the Iditarod National Historical Trail Project Jukebox Project. So Lee, thank you for visiting with me today, or letting me visit you.
Glad to have you.
And before we get into the Iditarod Trail, just a little bit about you and where you came from and how you ended up in Seward.
Well, I was born and grew up and went to college in Iowa, graduated from University of Dubuque. My first job was a teacher. Well, that's what I was trained for, in Dallas Center, Iowa, and to be quite honest, I didn't like it. It just didn't. And so they offered, you know, they offered me the next year, but I said, no, I don't want to. And then, of course, I was eligible for the draft, and the Army recruiter came looking, and he told me about, you know, you can sign up to be stationed in Europe. And I said, that sounds good. And so I did. I enlisted in the Army, served 3 years in Heidelberg, Germany. It was headquarters to USER. I was an office job, and enjoyed it, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do forever. So I came, got back, went with my parents in Iowa, and college where I graduated, I had, you know, a placement bureau, and I wrote them if there was anything. And they sent me, there were two looking for my areas, one in Audubon, Iowa, which was about 50 miles from where we lived, and one in Seward, Alaska. And I thought, well that sounds interesting. And I applied. And that was in January.
Of what year?
64.
Okay.
And I hadn't heard, and then I always remember I was laying on the couch in my parents' room, March. News flash. Alaska has a huge earthquake. Oh. Seward in flames, and this famous picture.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's that, because I hadn't heard. And my sister and her husband, who lived in a little town outside of Des Moines, had bought a house in Des Moines for rental, and it needed repair. And my sister, well, now, why don't you come up, and, you know, you can live in our house, and you do the painting, and you do that. And I said, okay. And in July, 64, phone rang at the house. My brother-in-law answered, and he come running. He said, you got a call from Alaska. And I went, it was the principal. We were still an independent district at that time. He said, you applied for a job up here? I said, yes. He said, you still want it? I said, yes. He said, fine, I'll send the paperwork down. He said, I don't know if you've heard, but we've had some problems up here. I said, I've heard. He said, well, that's all right. And that was it. That was my job interview. Papers came down, I filled them out, and I came up. I figured, well, a couple years, see what it's like, and still here.
Been here ever since. And you were teaching social studies.
Yeah, social studies. I did teach Spanish, too. And one of my favorite was photography.
Oh, okay.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
You could actually, the kids could see, you know, history. What's the use of history? You know? You've heard that, I'm
right.
sure. But, you know, if you do this right, also, you had to do things in right. The old days of developing, you know. And if you didn't do it in the right order, you didn't get anything.
Right.
So they saw that you had to follow directions, and if you did, there's still a magic about watching a picture come up in the developer,
oh,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something you just don't get.
No, you're right.
Anyway, I did enjoy that, and then I had to teach an English class once, and, you know, it's a small
right.
school.
Right.
Small high school.
And then
I taught there 26 years. I figured out I needed 30 years for a livable retirement pay. And you could buy in military time and previous time. So I had 1 year Iowa teaching, 3 years in the Army. So I bought that 4 years in. 26 years here, I retired.
Great.
90.
Okay.
I've been retired longer than I thought.
And you chose to stay in Seward?
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought of not.
Okay. There's
we were talking about this. I mentioned I had a talk to a group last
right,
night.
Right.
And I say, and I've said this many times, you either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
And the people who do, others have told me that too. You know, I came and I just wanted to stay.
Yeah.
It is a friendly place. It's very, they'll leave you alone if you want to be left alone. They'll invite you to this group or that group. And it's just a pleasant place and mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yeah, and beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yes. And so how did you end up getting involved with the Iditarod Historic Trail designation?
Well, it got started with the Resurrection Bay Historical Society, okay. which is our historical society
right.
here. One of the members invited me to a meeting, said you might be interested, since I taught history and, you know, world history and mm-hmm. U.S. history. And I went to a meeting. That was in 1966. Not a date I remember. And I joined, and then we met at the basement there, City Hall, where the mm-hmm. museum was. And it was just getting started. They were just trying to get it started, and I thought, this is, you know, interesting. I helped. Within a few years, I was the volunteer director of the museum, and I was elected president of the society. I was for many years. And then Dan Seavey entered the first Iditarod sled dog race. And he was at a meeting of the Historical Society. He was a member. And he told us about this idea they had of running the dog race from Stewart to Nome. Anchorage to Nome, over what was the old Iditarod Trail, which I admit I had never really heard of. And my interest was Stewart history. I thought, what did it? Got to look into that. And I soon found out Stewart had a great deal to do with the Iditarod. And so got interested. Of course, he ran that first race. And then Joe Reddington, you know, really pushed for the trail to be made a historic trail. And Dan was involved in that with them. And he came up with the idea of a... Well, the original idea, I remember I went to a meeting somewhere there... Joe Reddington was there.
In Knick?
No, the lady who was very involved with the Iditarod.
Dorothy Page.
Dorothy Page, thank you. Mother of the Iditarod, it's like.
Yeah.
Joe was the father, she was the mother. At her place, Joe Reddington was there and other people, whose names I don't all remember, talking about the idea. And the idea was that they would do like the Appalachian, there would be groups all along the trail that would take care of their portion of the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And became the idea of Stewart Iditarod Trailblazers.
Okay.
And as I said, I had that here. In September 15th, 1982, we had an organizational meeting down at the museum.
This is for the Stewart Trailblazers.
For the Stewart Trailblazers. They always have met at the museum. And Dan Seavey was elected president. Dorothy Knighton was vice president. Monty Hightower, secretary treasurer. And I was elected as a historian. And as they say, the rest is history. We just kept going. Dan and I are still here. The others, Dorothy has passed away. She was also a very, very important part of the museum. Very important. Wonderful lady. Wonderful lady.
And her husband was a pilot.
Yeah.
Right?
No. Keith, well, yeah. Keith was a pilot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also nice. I had one of her boys in school, too.
Yeah.
Good. Two of them in school. Hightower's are still on. They're over in Soldotna now.
Mm-hmm. So what was your purpose for the Trailblazers? Did you guys, when you first met in 82, was there a defined purpose? Do you have that in your...
Basically, we're, as we say, I have a newsletter somewhere, but basically we are responsible for location, maintenance, construction, maintenance of that part of the historic Iditarod Trail from Seward to Girdwood. And I'm sure Dan explained to you that trail no longer existed.
Yeah.
And that was one of our first initial goals, to find, and this had been provided for in the original plan of the trail.
For the comprehensive plan?
Yeah,
for the
comprehensive plan,
trail.
That there would be an alternative trail between Stewart and Girdwood.
Okay.
And Lowell Ferguson, who was a member, was instrumental, and he and Dan, of old trails. Actually, there was a lot, because they used to close navigation on Cook Inlet, Turnagain Arm in the winter. Mm. And even in when gold was discovered in Hope and Sunrise in the 90s, 1890s, right. Mail and supplies for Hope came into Resurrection Bay. There was no town at that time. And then taken by dog sled up to Hope and Sunrise. So those trails have been organized by dog mushers. And then they discovered gold, and some miners came in. So there was a lot of old trails around.
Right, because they didn't have ship traffic to Hope and Sunrise in the wintertime.
No, and they had to come in to sort.
Okay.
And so there were a lot of trails. And strangely enough, a lot of people don't realize, the Forest Service had a CCC group, Civilian Conservation, during the Depression. Mm-hmm. They built a lot of trails around on the peninsula. Hmm. So there were a lot of trails around. And so Lowell Ferguson, Dan Seavey, and others who knew the area located trails that could be connected, you know, mm-hmm. so there'd be a continuous trail between Seward and Girdwood. And they outlined it. We had maps made of the, you know, what we thought would be the best way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that costs a lot of money to actually make it. The real expense are bridges.
Yes.
And this, as you notice, is a mountainous country, a lot of ravines, and that was something which was a challenge. But all at that time, all that land was Forest Service, Chugach National Forest. And we had a very helpful man here, Pat O'Leary, who was a recreational man for it. He got involved, and he and Dan did some grant writing, and the Forest Service really got involved in the trail. They really did, and they started helping. And they had the money for bridges and so on, so they've, over the years, have done a great deal, and they still are. They still are continually doing work, especially through Turnagain Arm, mm-hmm. and other places. And they built several bridges between here and Girdwood. There, and two big gaps are scheduled to be filled. I'm sure Dan told you about a pedestrian bridge across, hooked onto Snow River Bridge.
No, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, okay. So you can walk from mile zero out to mile four and then down Nash Road and pick up and walk quite a ways up the trail.
Mm-hmm.
One place that is a problem getting across Snow. There is a bridge across Snow River, but, you know, just for cars. When the highway department finally chose a new Sterling Highway, it's behind Cooper Landing, but it crosses the Resurrection Trail.
Okay, yeah.
And in mitigation, the highway department agreed to build a pedestrian attachment to the Snow River Bridge.
Okay.
So you, and there is a trail right across. There's a trail up to the bridge, and there's a trail past the bridge. So it'll make it safer to
go onto the road.
Yeah, yeah. So that is done. The other big gap is Turnagain Arm.
Yeah.
The trail, they built a trail all the way through Turnagain Pass down to Egram Creek, where when you're coming down the road.
Right.
There's there. You know, they're redoing that whole highway down there. The highway department has agreed, and it is going to happen, to build a bike path all the way around on that road up to Winter Creek, down just before you get, which leads up to Girdwood and connects with the trail from then on.
Wow.
They would not let it be called an Iditarod Trail, because if it's a real and official trail, there are sort of, there are government rules and regulations. It's just a bike path that if you get on, you will happen to leave a part of the trail and come to another part. So we're happy with that.
Okay.
And that will, with a few more bridges here, and I've heard, you've heard of the Long Trail Project?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
From Seward to Fairbanks.
Right.
They are interested in connecting.
Right, all these pieces.
All these pieces. Because once you hit Girdwood, then the trail goes up.
Go Crow Pass.
Yeah, to Crow Pass and up, connects with others, and you can go quite a ways. Then they're going to go along with the pipeline road. And anyway, it looks, And they're willing to get money and put it into our development too.
And so for this new bike path along Turnagain that goes on the part of the historic trail, you can't put up a sign, but will you put up some interpretive panels to tell people that that's what it is?
Well, at least both points.
Yeah, okay.
Where you get on and where you get off.
Right.
You got to compromise.
Right. And so if to put up panels like that, the Trailblazers would pay for that, or the Alliance pays for that, or
hopefully the Forest Service.
Okay.
To be blunt.
Okay.
Because they're at both ends.
Okay.
They're trying to get past people, and they're also the Whittier up Lena. Whittier has a very, very active trail group. They're not a Trailblazer group, but they are active trail group. Oh. Very active.
Cool.
There's that idea of having Blazer, it never really worked out. There is one at McGrath, and they did a tremendous work on a shelter cabin up there.
The Carlson Cabin?
I don't remember its name, but yeah, that could be. But they did a lot of work on that. And the Gnome Kennel Club is very big. They've doing work, too, on some shelters up. White Mountain are going to build a whole new one.
Yeah.
The Alliance is giving money for that.
Right.
So,
well, and the Gnome Kennel Club has been around for a long time, right?
They're the ones who organized the All-Alaska Sweepstakes back there in the early 1910s.
Yeah.
They're very active. Also, they're planning for the upcoming anniversary in 2 years of the Serum Run, which is in 1925.
Oh, okay.
2025 is sneaking up on us.
But as you say, the Serum Run
had nothing to do with the race. The race was based on the All-Alaska Sweepstakes. In fact, the first rules were based on the rules that were laid down for the All-Alaska Sweepstakes.
Right.
How it got mixed up, they blamed the British. there was something in a London paper about the sweepstakes is fairly well known, and it just got picked up.
Right.
And we hear it all the time.
Yeah.
I know when I was in the museum, people go, that was the, they're not always sure what the disease was, but they knew there was a serum.
Right.
It might have been polio, it might have been smallpox, but they knew there was a run up there. But we had very clearly stated, if they read, it was the sweepstakes.
Well, and I can see the confusion with the trail. There's the historic trail.
Oh, right.
That was used for, mail and the gold miners and stuff, and then the Serum Run used part of that trail
from Caltag to Nome.
Okay.
We forget, there's one thing a lot of people don't realize, most of that was done by the railroad. The original serum was at the hospital in Anchorage.
Right, and they got it to Nanana.
It was taken up to Nanana by rail.
Right.
And then from Nanana across, from Caltag to Nome, it was the Iditarod Trail.
And then the dog race was the next thing to use part of the trail.
Right, from Anchorage. Originally, it did start, and really started
in
Anchorage.
I know. I watched it it really started in downtown Anchorage.
And up to, they originally were going to Iditarod, but there was nothing there. So they said, why don't we go to Nome?
Right.
So they went to Nome.
Right.
I may interrupt, but being a Sordite, they needed more serum, so they had it shipped up from Seattle. The ship Alameda landed here at Seward, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the railroad took that serum from Seward to Nanana, and then there was a second run across to Nome.
But that one doesn't get the publicity.
No, because it was
the second.
Yeah. But Seward was involved in that one. We always...
Well, again, before I started this project, I was not aware of really the historic trail coming from Seward to... over Crow Pass to Kinnick and out.
Yeah.
I think most Alaskans don't know that.
No. This is one of our biggest, I guess, the Trailblazer prizes to convince people of that. We have the statues, we have signs.
Right.
The new museum also has an Iditarod section. And we have the Mile Zero sign, which is one of the most photographed things by tourists in town. The most photograph is the big anchor down in the small boat harbor.
Right.
But anytime you're walking along there, you see people. And of course, the trail is the first mile, and we have, you saw that sign.
Right.
You took a picture of that little sign.
Right.
We have those all the way out to Nash Road.
Okay.
We have those little signs.
Right, and it's now this bike path. That's what the, in town, what you're talking about is the paved bike path along the water.
Yeah, but right? That is.
That's the trail.
There is a memorandum of understanding between the Bureau of Land Management, which is the federal agency mm-hmm. in charge of the Iditarod Trail, and the city of Seward to preserve and protect the trail through the town of Seward.
Right.
So it is officially the Iditarod Trail.
Right. So how did you guys figure out that's the route that the trail went?
Oh, it's just... No one really knows.
Okay.
In fact, they would... Well, partly... Well, that was... it probably started downtown, to be honest. Even the original Iditarod Trail, the railroad had gotten to Girdwood.
Okay.
When the trail was laid on Goodwin and they, you know, surveyed mm-hmm. from Nome down. The trail actually stopped at Girdwood.
Okay.
Because there was a railroad
track. There was already a railroad?
Yeah, the railroad did go there, Alaska Northern. And they could take the railroad and not just use the tracks for a trail, which they did. In those days, the railroad was pretty broke and it didn't run a lot. So they just used the tracks. So that, where's mile zero? When Goodwin laid it down, he said Nome and Seward.
Okay.
He didn't say street number or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows? I have a theory. At that time, as I told you, the depot was at the end of Adams. That's
right.
Where people got on and off the trail. On and off the railroad.
Right.
So I figured maybe Goodwin got off there and said, this is it. I don't know. Everybody's got to. The gold trains coming down, the sleds bringing the gold down, and of course, great amount of money came down. They, of course, ended up at the bank, the old First National on 4th Street. Or Brown and Hawkins had a bank on 4th Street. So they would have come in that way, across the lagoon and right down 4th, which there was then. I don't think anybody back then in 1910 was thinking about a historic trail.
Right.
What's the fastest way out of town? What's the easiest way into town?
Right. And as you say that they were taking mail and supplies over to Hope and Sunrise. They would have gone from Tidewater where the ship brought all that stuff in.
Yeah. The dock was right at the end of 4th Avenue.
Right.
So it made sense to come up 4th.
Right.
There was, at that time too, Bowl Creek ran down, but it's now Jefferson Street.
Oh, okay.
But there were bridges across it. Flooded a lot. But so if they were trying to get downtown, they had to go across either 3rd or 4th Street.
Oh, where the bridges were.
Yeah. And 4th was the main one. So they would have come down 4th Avenue.
Yeah.
There's no doubt of that.
But you couldn't put the...
No.
The trail designation right down 4th Avenue.
No. You probably could have, but it wouldn't have been practical. When this was laid out, this is going to be it.
Yeah.
As we said, the original trail, both the highway and the park and the train, the railroad were not prone to give us back the original route.
Yes. Well, that's why the southern section down here where the highway has covered so much of what would have been trail originally, you guys have had to adjust to that.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, when you drive to Anchorage, from Seward to the highway from Seward to the Hope turnoff is pretty, basically, I'm sure, what's the dog trail.
Right.
At that time. That was, as I said, was put in the, and this we owe a lot to Dan Seavey on that. The original agreement, the original plan, was just to have a few signs up on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he pushed for an alternative trail, and that is in the agreement that there will be an alternative trail from Seward to Girdwood.
And so for there to be an alternative trail means somebody has to go and mark a trail and build a trail and decide where that trail is going.
It couldn't be the original because the original was...
So who has done that?
The trailblazers. Actually, one of the main people was Lowell Ferguson.
Okay.
He was, I don't have it here. We are trying to get some bridges officially named for him.
Oh.
They've been unofficial. This is Lowell. Somewhere here.
And he was a
trailblazer, yeah. He was a longtime man, did a lot of hunting, had tramped around all the woods here for years. We're not present. And was instrumental. You never find things when you're looking for them.
You have great files on all this.
Well, this is what I'm going to send to the state for the name. His picture's in here somewhere. But anyway, I may have taken out because I was redoing. Yeah, I think I took it out. I was doing some revising. But anyway, Lowell Ferguson was instrumental there. There's some lakes on the trail by up from Bear Lake. We put a sign up years when he died in the 60s, Lowell Ferguson Lakes. And nobody's ever contested. The bears tore them down a couple of times, but we put them back up. But I've got the paperwork here I'm going to submit to have them officially named.
Okay.
Lowell Ferguson Lakes. And Dan also had done a lot of travel, hiking around and mountain climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And others. Fred Moore, who's also did a lot of work, had done a lot of tramping around the area. And old timers who can remember. Oh yeah, you know, people. We have to be honest here. That was also the period when the Forest Service was burning cabins.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, in the 60s, they wanted to get rid of the cabins in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so, a lot of people who knew things wouldn't talk to anybody. They were afraid.
Right.
But Lowell, who knew him, and they knew, trusted him, and they could say, well, yeah, there is a trail there. They could point out some old trails. So it was done. And as I said, they had a map, and it's basically that's what the Forest Service has been working on, that trail, because it was the easiest way to go.
Yeah.
We always pick the easiest way. I mean, it's,
yes.
On a completely unrelated matter, I was reading a study. Why do people and bears keep running into each other? Because they both tend to go the easiest way there is to get someplace.
Of course. Well, you mentioned somebody in the local Forest Service office.
Pat O'Leary.
And he was particularly...
very helpful. Very supportive. They still are. They're all very supportive. We just had a meeting with some of them. I don't remember the name. He's up in Anchorage. There's some parking problems, the trail out of Bear Lake in mm-hmm. that area. And they're planning... a parking area there.
Okay.
And we were meeting out there with them and residents of the area.
Yeah, I'm sure the people who live out there don't...
Well, there's especially one gentleman who... And I don't blame him in the way that, you know, they block his way. And anyway, they plow into this forest and set up
they're setting up a parking area.
Yeah, there's an area there right off the trail. They're going to have to cut a lot of trees.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the people there at the meeting was a local forester who's willing to do that. And so there's ongoing... That's an ongoing project, which mm-hmm. the Trailblazers will help with as much as they can. And the Forest Service is dedicated. Once you get it down on paper.
Right.
They are really seriously dedicated to getting that done. And they have the plans.
So it's been an important partnership for the Seward Trailblazers to have the Forest Service.
Yeah. Oh, the Forest Service has been. Once they got hooked, let's say, they have done tremendous amount of trail work, bridges, and they, like many federal agencies, have plans. If any money comes along, it's all ready to go. You know, they don't have to. They can be the first in line.
So how did you get them hooked?
Well, Pat O'Leary, Dan and Pat. Pat, this was great, and he helped write the first grant to get some money to start on it. And they realized this is a... It's a part of our job as Forest Service.
Yeah.
And they have changed. They have become more historically oriented. and they don't burn cabins anymore.
Right. Well, and Pat, you said, was a recreation.
Well, I can't remember the exact title, but he was the, he's retired now, but he's still active. In fact, he was at that meeting, and we had a meeting down here. You know, as you mentioned, we're working on another project to get a statue of Alfred Lowell, who was instrumental in work on the Iditarod Trail, and the city and Pat. Pat is still helping on that. So he's still actively interested in that. Mm-hmm. He's retired, and he doesn't live here continually anymore, but he's always active. Once you get hooked on these things, you stay.
It sounds like it. Your Trailblazers group is really active.
One of the first big projects was the statue of the miner and his dog there about the end of 4th Avenue.
And why did you guys decide to do that?
Because, as you mentioned, we're constantly trying to convince or educate people that Stewart is the star of the Iditarod Trail. I don't know, have you heard of the iTract project?
A little bit. Tell me more about it.
Well, it's involved, but it's one of the best things I think the Iditarod Historic Trail Alliance is doing. Iditarod Trail to Every Classroom. Julie Bittner and a lady from the Forest Service, whose name I don't remember, were at one of those meetings in Washington. A speaker of the Appalachian Trail was talking about a project of getting the schools involved. Mm-hmm. And they said, we got to do this. So basically what it is, now it's being done virtually the last couple of years, but get teachers on schools along the trail to adapt, get kids outside, but to adapt, to educate them about the trail, what their part of the trail. And there was one of the first teachers were sewer teachers. Mm. And they got involved in it. They did cleanup of Scheffler Creek. Again, it doesn't have to be the trail itself, but Scheffler Creek runs. It's where the little bridge is on it. And they cleaned that up and had a meeting with people in the area to keep it clean. And it is a major fish. That's where the fish come in. That's where the silvers are coming in to go up.
Right.
And there's many other projects, but when we came up with this idea for a statue, that teacher got a hold of Dan and said, you got to involve the school in this. Mm-hmm. And we did. The whole elementary school came down for the dedication, down the Iditarod Trail. They walked down from the school. And I did a program on that too. Mm-hmm. But they sang to start the dedication. And by the way, it was completely an Alaska project. The stone he's standing on, donated from a company across the bay. The bronze statue was made by Pat Garley up in Palmer. Bronze, something like that, his name. But anyway, Pat Garley made it. Mm-hmm. Put it up. Anyway, we had a dedication. The whole grade school was there. We had a very supportive music teacher at the time. And to open up, they sang Alaska Flag. They knew the words, you know, very enthusiastic. And then we had, people introduced Pat and all that. And then at the end, they sang, I did, you know,
Hobo Jim's song.
Yeah. They said, very enthusiastic.
Good.
If we have some time later, I've got it somewhere here. Very enthusiastically sang that. And so they were involved. That, again, growing out of the iTrick. Mm-hmm. They were involved. And again, it was there to convince people that this, because everybody thinks it starts in Anchorage.
Right.
And one of the major, not only the Trailblazers, but of the Iditarod Historic Trail Alliance. There's the trail and there's the race. We're not in competition.
Right.
We work together. But the trail is from Seward to Nome. The race, well, technically Anchorage to Nome.
Right.
and it keeps getting a little further north. Right. All that. But I mean, you know, we have given the Iditarod people a lot of money for trail work because the trail is for both of us. So we support them, and they have been very supportive too of helping us.
Do you think having the dog race helped get the trail designated?
Oh, absolutely. Joe Reddington, of course, is well known for the race.
Right.
But he also was one of the driving forces between the designation as a trail, historic trail. As he said, he wanted that there for his children and his grandchildren, the real trail. So he was instrumental in getting that done. And it was the first National Historic Trail.
Right. And was Dorothy Page involved in the trail part?
I know,
she was in the race.
Yeah, she was involved. As I said, we had a meeting at her place, you know, we were talking about the trail and this idea of having groups there. Yeah, she was supportive of that, too. I think all the original were. Mm-hmm. Well, they still are. I mean, all the race people are very involved. And we understand each other. But it is hard. It's very hard to convince the two big, the Serum Run, the race, and Stuart sort of gets forgotten.
Right.
But the original survey for the trail was done in 1908.
Okay.
January of 19. We had a centennial celebration here in January of 2008. Of course, it was a windy day, a little cold, but we had it down there at the zero sign.
Right.
Dan's son, Mitch, actually, he went, he set off with dogs from here just to, you know, to give the illusion of it. Governor Palin was down for it and spoke. And we had a celebration, you know. We had talks about it. It was a celebration of the trail. Anyway, that trail, the idea was a mail trail between Seward and Nome. Because at that time, of course, as you know, everybody knows, Nome is iced in all winter.
Right.
The mail went up to Valdez, then taken up by the Richardson Trail to Fairbanks, and then across from Fairbanks, Nome, which is a little...
Right.
Somebody said, you know, the old geometry principle, the shortest distance from 3 points straight line.
Right.
You could just go up from Seward to Nome. Goodwin was involved in that too, Walter Goodwin. And he said, you know, yeah, it's feasible. The trail is feasible. But it wouldn't be used much. It just isn't worth the cost. And then, this one is an easy day to remember. Christmas Day, 1908, John Beaton, William Dykeman found gold on Otter Creek in the Iditarod country.
Uh-huh.
And then a lot of people wanted to use get up there. And so the trail was then. Although it is a trail, went to Nome. Most of the people, of course, were going between Iditarod and Seward.
And so did Goodwin survey the whole trail?
He really didn't do anything on the peninsula because it was already here.
Okay.
You know, the trails and the railroad went to Girdwood.
Okay.
He surveyed from Nome to Girdwood.
Okay.
To be honest. They used the existing trails down here. So there were variations made over the years. And as you know, trails constantly need weeding and timber cut and realignment. It was an ongoing project.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there were roadhouses all along the trail, every 20, 25 miles, because a lot of people walked.
Really?
Our miner, he's setting out with his dog. A lot of people walked up. They could walk. That was nothing in those days, walk 20 miles.
Mm.
I remember talking to people here in Seward. They walked up to Anchorage.
Wow.
Not on one day necessarily, but they would stop here and there visiting. They would walk. It was nothing. It's the way you did things.
Right.
You know? But anyway, the roadhouses were, of course, vital. And they had beds, more or less.
Right.
Some were better than others. Food. Many of them had kennels for the dogs. And, you know, so you could walk 20 miles or so.
Right.
And the territory, that of course was a territory, passed a law somewhere in there in 1911, 12, that everybody had to sign in at a roadhouse because, as happened, as everybody gets, things can happen on the trail. So they could say, okay, this, we know he was here.
Oh, right.
But he never signed in at the next trail house. So if we're going to search, this is the area to search. I've done a lot of, one of the things the Trailblazers did, they bought the microfilms of the Iditarod Pioneer newspaper for us. And so I've gone through those. I have a bunch of notebooks. I like paper still. I usually print them out.
Mm-hmm.
People helped people.
Yeah.
If someone was missing, a search party was sent out right away. They really did. The Alaska Spirit, as we sometimes say, but who knows? It could be me next time.
Right.
So they really did search. And if they found a body, it was brought in for proper burial. I mean, it was a very cooperative. I mean, when you got to the mining, maybe it wasn't as cooperative.
Right.
Because it's amazing the amount of lawyers in Iditarod.
Oh, really?
And there were, you know. Anyway, but as far as helping people on the trail, everyone was always willing to help each
right.
other on the trail. So that was one thing that really struck me, how that worked out.
Yeah. May I interrupt?
Yes.
One is... You're tapping your hands on the table. Ooh. If you could maybe try and avoid doing
I
that.
I can do
it. I'm sure it's a habit you're not even
yeah.
aware of, but it's coming in on the microphone. So thank you. Now, you have this document here in front of you. Is that like the history of the Trailblazers from your PowerPoint presentation?
What it is, as I said, the title was Iditarod, Facts and a Fiction. And it is the history of the Iditarod Trail.
Okay.
From the beginning, the... And the three groups that are with it, not necessarily their history, but what they do, the race committee, which really started it.
Right.
Started this whole thing, got it interesting. The race committee, Iditarod race committee. Then it was originally the Iditarod Historic Trail Inc.
Right.
Was
well,
the first name.
It was the advisory council.
Well, the advisory council, but they had nothing to do with this. I mean,
okay.
Well, I mean, they are the ones that have agreed to have an alternative trail down here.
Okay.
But as Dan always said, about the only thing they ever did at a meeting was decide on when the next meeting was going to be. I'm sure he told you that.
Right. And so I don't want to get off subject here. So the three groups you're talking about.
And then the
Inc.
Iditarod Trail, Historic Iditarod Trail Alliance.
Right.
Now, we changed their name.
Right.
And got a mission statement. That was one of Judy Bittner's first things when she became president. Get that organized. And then the Seward Trailblazers.
Right.
These are the three groups. There are other groups, obviously, but for Seward,
right.
which, of course, is the most important, that's the three groups that we did. And then let's say, what killed the trail was the railroad and the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
As the railroad was built north, people took the railroad up.
Right.
Mail went up from up the railroad to Nenana and then across. Really a new trail, a trail from Nenana to Iditarod. And then pretty soon, they wanted to come out. They took an airplane from Iditarod to Fairbanks and rode the railroad down.
Right.
So the trail between Seward, Iditarod pretty well fell into disuse. The trail up in the north was continually used, still is today, by people. From
yeah.
village to village.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an active...
It's their
real,
road between
it's their
villages.
Road.
Yeah.
That's why those shelter cabins are so vital up there.
Yeah.
But the rest, and of course, Iditarod and Platt are ghost towns and disintegrating.
Right.
So all that... But anyway, that's what the historic trail is involved in, trying to preserve the original trail. Another very, very important project... The Iditarod Historic Trail Alliance did way back. Jim Phelan, he was the governor's father-in-law, by the way, Governor Phelan's
okay.
son, came up with the idea. You know, this is another thing most people know. Most of the trail is on state land.
Right.
The It's a federal trail, so a federal agency is in charge, which is the Bureau of Land Management. But they only own a couple little chunks here and there. And he's using money. We get money from the trail, the Bureau of Land Management. And to cooperate with the state to set up an easement project to secure easements on the whole trail from Nome to Seward. A lot had been done in Seward area, and they were set up. The only area where there aren't any easements in some place is down in the Matanuska Valley, which, you know, it's growing so fast that things which everybody assumed would be, always be there aren't, you know. Well, we always went that way. There was that big lawsuit a few years ago where the trail went through what was a homestead. Mm-hmm. And they had been doing it for years, and then the man died. His daughters, who don't even live here, they live in California, put up no trespass signs. Actually, it went to court. The state got involved, saying this is a part of the historic trail. And it went to court, and the state won.
Oh.
They have the right. They didn't want the land. That belongs to them.
They wanted the right.
But the right of way. Right. And the court, and it went to the state Supreme Court.
Wow.
And they said there is an historic easement. People have been using that long enough that they have established an easement on that trail.
That's a hard case to win. Those don't happen very often.
No, but there was a lot of people in the area. So I remember we went on that trail in the 50s, the 40s, right. The 50s. Which was a landmark case. Again, it's the state. Yeah. And their argument, this is an integral part of the Iditarod Trail.
Wow.
And they won. The only thing the Supreme Court said, they thought some of the lawyer fees were a little high, but so they told them to go back and look over that, because the losers also had to pay the court costs.
Right.
And they had the money. It's unbelievable. They're two girls, see?
And so that the state was able to win because the historic trail has been marked and identified on...
Yeah, and well, basically maps. They won because many people, mushers, could testify that was a part of the Iditarod Trail. It had always been a part of the trail. We had been using that as a dog trail for years. We've always recognized it as a part. So it was the memory. And you do, if you go across an area for so many years, nobody stops you. Right. You have a right of way.
Yeah, but it's very hard to prove.
Yes, it is. But they had still people who could prove it.
Yeah.
They had been there for years.
Right.
And they could testify that Joe Reddington had said this, and you know.
Right.
So they, it is hard to prove.
Wow.
But they proved it, and they got the right of way.
And so this project from Jim Palin.
Yeah, well, he started the idea. Mm-hmm. The state hired some people, and they, when they started cutting back, they reduced it. But there's still money sitting there in a pot to do it. But they said they did everything. I think there's about 200 miles in the Matanuska Valley, which is just such a maze, you know, of new developments.
Right.
That's very hard. It's interesting. I was just reading. The Appalachian Trail is having problems, too. Some of the trails up there, it was, as they said, it used to be a handshake.
Right.
And now new owners say, you can't go through it. Right.
So it's a lot of with private landowners.
Oh, yeah.
It's getting an easement on private land.
Yeah. The right to go through there. Again, right. You're not taking their property. Where there's, and most of it is on state land, so there's no problem there. The state.
Right.
So very little is on private land.
Okay.
But even the state, you know.
You have to formally...
Formally say, this is it.
Right.
It has to be formal. You got to get things in writing.
Right.
That's like even in Seward, we have it in writing, an agreement between the city, which they have to remind them every once in a while that they do have it. We have a formal agreement that the city of Seward is committed to this trail through Seward to preserve it and protect the historic. And, you know, these have been...
Yeah, well, also in... management plans and things that to say, you know, somebody asks for a permit to do something, they can say, well, no, that you can't do it right there because there's a trail, historic trail.
They tried also in their attempts to have, as they, I can't remember what they call them now, but so many feet from the trail preserved.
Oh, yeah, corridor, yeah.
Yeah, a corridor. That is not always possible, to be honest. It isn't. The Forest Service is very good about it, as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think things like the bike path and the
right.
You can't do you can't do things someplace, and even in town here, it's, no one has ever suggested that.
Right.
But so there are. You were right. There. Once you got it in writing, then it's amazing.
Right. So were you involved on the advisory council?
When no, did you I had first... absolutely nothing to do with it.
Okay. When did you first get involved?
Well, I got involved in the Trailblazers because of Dan.
Right.
And he got Historical Society. You know, we were into, and I was interested because it was a new exhibit in the museum. I'll be honest, my main interest in those days was the museum.
Right.
But I, you know, so I had nothing to do with tramping around and looking for a trail.
But you did a lot of the historic research.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. I a whole new area opened up to us. Well, as I said, I had nothing to do with the advisory board. I remember Dan talking about it once in a while, but I had nothing to do with that. But then when the, you know, the Historic Trail Inc.
Right.
was organized, or going to be organized, I had a phone call from Greg Bill, who was the ad man for the race. You know, he got the sponsorships. He was a man to raise money for
the sled dog race.
Sled dog race.
Okay.
The Alliance, I'll say the Alliance because that's what has one seat on the board is reserved for a person from the race committee.
Okay.
He was the man at that time. Called me up and said, Dan Seavey suggested that you take the post. The Alliance also, board seats are by area. There's one seat is reserved for a Kenai Peninsula person, you know, and St. Matt, who's sitting, and so on up the trail. That you take be our representative for the Kenai Peninsula. And I said, what do I have to do? He said, well, send us $20 for membership. And I did. And I always remember, Dan may have told you this about the first. Dan somehow finagled him into that the official mailbox is here in Seward.
Oh.
For the group.
Oh, really? For the Alliance?
Yeah.
Oh.
Still is.
How did that happen?
Dan Seavey, some talked him into it, I guess. I pick it up, send up when we have to. Anyway, so the original ballots and so on came here. And we were going to the first meeting. It was sometime in November. And he was just in his regular car. And we couldn't make it up Mile 12 Hill because of ice.
Hmm.
So we had to pull over. He had a cell phone back then. We called Anchorage. They were meeting in some hotel. I don't remember. But anyway, he had a phone number saying we might be a little late. We were waiting for the sand truck, which actually, I think about 20 minutes we sat there. Sand truck came and we got there. And I don't remember the hotel, but we were in a room, all strangers to me, except Dan, of course. And then that's where I met Leo Rasmussen. He was presiding.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Bill was there, was introduced. And other people, most aren't on the board. Well, actually, the only two original people left on the board are Dan and myself. It's been a while. But anyway, organized. Leo was president, was going to be president. I can't remember. I just remember they said, asked if I wanted to be treasurer, and I said no, because I'm very nervous around money. You know. Anyway, we elected, and I guess I will have to be honest on it. I think the first 3 or so years was, none of us really knew what to do. What were we doing? What was the purpose? And the Forest, you know, the Bureau of Land Management was our federal agency. They weren't too sure what was being done either. And they didn't they had a person, a very nice guy whose name I do not remember, but it was a part-time deal with him. You know,
mm-hmm.
But he was very helpful as much as he could. He was really a very nice man, and everybody on the board was, you know, wanted to do, you know, what we knew the general purpose was to preserve and publicize the trail, but how do we do it? How do we get money? How do we get members? That was really the first one, the first thing. How do we get members? And some people had mailing lists, came up with them. I remember, I think it was the second meeting. It was, nothing had been set out. There was three or four of us met up in Girdwood, and that came up. And I volunteered to help on that. And they gave us the names, and we sent them out from here, you know.
So people had mailing lists from other organizations?
Yeah, yeah, that they would use. And I don't blame them. The Iditarod race people will not give out their membership list. And I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it when I get junk mail, which I know came from some right. group I joined. But others did. And so we did send out... and I don't know, our membership's been around 100 up and down.
Mm-hmm.
We keep fighting at it. We keep working at it. Keep working at
and
it.
What's the role of having members for the Alliance?
Well, first of all, well, support. The idea was, and they can be anyway, there a lot of them are, of course, out of state, on the state. Support for the trail, interest in the trail, publicity for the trail. And I guess, too, you just know you're not alone. There are people out there who care about the trail.
Right.
And that's the iTrek project has brought a lot of people in.
Do you ever call on the membership for an advocacy, like call your congressperson for this issue? Or
we do. We don't really say that. I do the newsletter. And if there's something going on, I always say, you know, this is before Congress or something, you know. I'm somewhat skeptical sometimes of how much that works with.
Mm-hmm.
But our congressional delegation has been very supportive. Because let's face it, one thing we keep bringing up, and Stuart has done this forever. I brought this up. I had a meeting last night. I talked to a group about the history of Stuart.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart always has the ability to see a way to profit from things. I'll be honest. And they saw, the Iditarod Trail, very honestly, they sent out, they advertised, go to the trail through Seward. You can just come to Seward. You don't have to bring anything with you. Everything you need, you can buy in Seward, you know. Come to Seward. They saw it as a way to make money.
Yeah, a tourist destination.
The trail is still that. You know, yeah. You've heard of the Long Trail Project.
Right.
It is being pushed as a tourist, as an economic thing, like the Appalachian Trail. It'll bring people. People bring money.
Right.
There's a little spiel in the local newspaper at the time. They said, you know, this is a great thing. Money comes in and it stays here. They pay us, you know, because sometimes they stayed for a hotel.
Right.
They said, you can, Seward is a great place. If you can't go right away, we have restaurants. We have a hospital.
Right.
We have churches. You can go to church. And then, you know, go on. So hopefully they would stay a day or two
right.
at a hotel, buy something, hire a guide. You know, anyway, just, right. It was a financial thing. And then the mail, Seward saw themselves too as, it never worked out, but as the center for the mail would go up to Nome and spread out all over. It never really worked there. Again, eventually the airplanes killed a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And the railroad. And the railroad.
So you mentioned the congressional delegation.
Has been very supportive.
Did you ever go to Washington, D.C.?
No. There have been people. Judy, I know, has gone and others have gone over the years. I'm not much of a traveler.
Yeah. And then what about, so you didn't go to any of the national meetings.
No,
I forgot to ask Dan about that.
Yeah, I haven't. We didn't meet last year. Right. Again, this year, the local, the
right.
Alliance is a virtual meeting. I go to Anchorage. I'm willing to go to Anchorage.
Right.
Beyond that, I just not much into that.
So tell me about the newsletter. That's a newsletter you do for the Alliance?
Yeah, it came about again at that meeting where we didn't know what, nothing had been sent out. And I did a newsletter for the Trailblazers. And I said, well, I do it anyway.
I was wondering if you have two different newsletters?
Yeah, the Trailblazers is my main one, of course. Because I said, well, a lot of things are the same. There's a little. I knew I had. Vol Ferguson.
Oh.
That's an old one, but that's the Trailblazer newsletter.
Okay.
When he died, we put that in there, and we tried to, we're working on getting that name. Anyway, this was, this is the back.
Right. I'm going to take a picture of this afterwards.
Take the back of it. Somewhere I have a picture of a color. Well, this is the black and white, but
yeah.
I just had black and white printer at that time. Actually, I think I did this at the school before I had a camera. What's the date on that?
So, 2003.
Okay, that was mine, yeah. When I started this, I didn't have a computer, but I could use one at school.
Right.
And anyway, I was doing this one way back. I didn't start it. I think Hightower did type out one or two, and then someone else did it for a year or so, didn't want to keep doing it. And so Dan, you know, said, when I get into something, I always mention Dan,
right.
Which is good. He said, you want to do it? And I've been doing it ever since. Once a month. Well, I don't put it out in June, July and August. July, anyway.
And so ever since, do you have an idea of when you started doing it?
Well, it'd probably be in the 90s.
Okay.
I have them stored away here.
Well, that's good that someone has them archived.
Yeah. It was, notice that why this is this way. We use this for the address, you know?
Oh, right. It's a fold, a tri-fold
fold
thing. Yeah.
But the post office, and we just had a piece of tape of them. Post office, so we couldn't do that anymore. So now I put a whole page and put them in an envelope.
Oh.
I still, because I like
paper. You don't do it digitally.
No, but the Alliance, well, I used to send them out. I don't really want to do this.
Right.
But no one else wanted to do the newsletter, so we reached a compromise. I do the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
I print a copy and put a copy on a disc. I send it up to Anchorage, and we've had we share a secretary with the Alaska Preservation Society up there, something like that.
Okay.
And they then, and the members have a choice, email or paper.
Okay.
I think most of them take paper. I take paper. I still like paper. And they do all that. But they learned one thing, interesting enough. Membership response was very weak on email. So membership reminder goes out to mail to everyone.
You know, not everybody has email.
That's true.
Right.
But it was interesting, even though it's email. But that's all done in Anchorage. I send it up to Judy. She gives it to whoever it is, I don't know, and they do
it. But your Seward Trailblazer one.
That I do all. Yeah. I run it off here, put it in envelopes, and send it off.
And your Seward Trailblazer membership, is that all Seward people? Or?
Oh, no. Well, mostly. No, not all. Mostly, but we have several in Anchorage. Well, Judy Bittner is a member, and Kevin Keel, and others. And there's some outside, people who have moved outside, or there's a couple of people who used to work for the Forest Service, got interest, and they keep the interest. And some people who are up here as, I gave you the brochure there.
Yeah.
They see these brochures. There's a, says if you want to join.
Oh, right.
And we do get, I think I sent them out, I think there's about a dozen out of state.
Oh.
And probably about, I've sent out 60 now. 60, we have 60.
60 that you go.
Yeah.
And how often do you do the Seward Trailblazers?
Every month except
okay,
July.
So the Alliance and the Trailblazers?
The Alliance is 12 months.
Oh, but every month for both of those, that's a lot.
I lost my train of thought there.
What goes into the...
one thing I put in both of them, because I got started in newsletters with the Resurrection Bay Historical Society.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. I always would put in a second quote from the past, a quote from an old newspaper.
Right.
Something of interest, you know. And I do the same with these. I did that with the ours.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always have a quote from the Anchorage paper, and then when we got the bit of the microfilm to the Iditarod paper, I did the same. Like here, this one, Well, and I do that also in the Iditarod. I here, you know, from the past, Seward Weekly Gateway, and there it was in 1909, Iditarod Goldfields may rival Klondike. Seward, the gateway to the Iditarod. Mm,
perfect.
So, and always have a thing from the past.
Right.
Then, if there's anything like, you know, the governor first put money in the budget for helping finance the Long Trail, and then he vetoed it, that goes in. The stories about the Long Trail, I pilfer a lot from, you've heard of Alaska Trails, the statewide organization.
Yeah.
I always go through their newsletter, and anything of interest to us, I put in there. I get the partnership for National Trails a lot, National Trails.
Mm-hmm.
I get that newsletter or their magazine,
mm-hmm.
and find things of interest there, or just things of trails, other places. It had absolutely nothing to do with us, but I read an interesting article in the paper about one of the problems on trails in Switzerland is cows. The cattle are just turned loose in the summer.
Yeah, right.
And they get very possessive. And people have actually been killed by cows. They're protecting their calves. And so anyway, they have signs all around, beware of the cows.
No, right.
We say beware of the bears.
Right.
I mean, it has nothing to do with it, but it was interesting. I thought,
it's fun.
Yeah, it's a fun thing.
Yeah.
You know? So a little news tidbit.
So it's more than just about the Iditarod Historic Trail.
Yeah, well, mainly we're pushing the Seward aspect.
Yeah.
And the things, I mean, our meetings, and then, there, you know, what's going on in the museum, because they have been doing a new exhibit. And what the Iditarod Alliance is doing.
Right.
Yeah. So to keep them informed of what's going on.
Yeah. So how often do your Trailblazers group meet?
Well, we did.
Right.
Until last year, meet every month except during the summer, because
right.
everything stops in the summer because
right.
we're all busy. Well, I'm not, but most people are busy making money.
Right.
So we did not meet, but we did not meet at all last year. We had a couple of short meetings down at the pavilion, I pointed
right.
out to you earlier.
You could be outside.
Yeah, to be outside. We did meet there, some important things that had to be settled. Dan is talking about getting going again this.
So what's so important for the Trailblazers, something that has to be settled?
Well, there was again, the Forest Service was asking about some alternative trails around the Ptarmigan
okay.
to coming down toward the Snow River. There were two or three, and which one was the Trailblazers? And if we would advise them on some of these things, and Dan and Fred Moore know those.
Right.
You know what you're talking about, don't worry about it.
Well, it's nice that they ask.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they
That's
ask.
A
again,
good relationship.
I cannot stress enough, the Forest Service have been extremely supportive.
Yeah.
And the Bureau of Land Management, Kevin Keeler, has been very, very
good.
Very positive.
Yeah, I don't know about the other parts of the trail, if they've had the same...
I don't. Well, again, I admit I'm a little provincial on that.
Right.
I know the Nome Kennel Club has been extremely active. They're getting that state, all state land.
Yeah.
There was a Kinnick Trailblazer for a while, but that sort of died out. But that's a very big dog mushing area.
Yeah.
So they are interested. Alaskans are not always joiners.
No.
to be honest.
But, if it's a part of the trail that you use and it's important to you, then they do speak up.
Oh, yes. They are very vocal in the valley because they are having a lot of problems. I used to go this way. Now there's a house there.
Yeah, right.
Or they're going to build a road there. What's that going to do to us?
And so do you think the Alliance has been successful in its public education efforts?
No, not completely. I mean, it was very frustrating. I sat in the museum desk for years. People walking out. Oh, yeah, that idea. That all started with that serum run. It's still, or I stand down by the statue watching toward somebody. Oh, I thought that all started in Anchorage because the race is what they're talking about, not the trail.
Right.
It's an ongoing thing. It's a never-ending thing.
Right.
That's why we put out that pamphlet. But I know... which is very popular. The Chamber of Commerce told me it's one of their most popular. In fact, I ran out this summer, this winter. We're getting a new one put out. I think I've said that already.
Right.
But the Chamber went through hotels. I checked every week, and sometimes they were empty.
Wow.
And so it is very popular. There is a program, Mike mentioned on there, if you have the thing handy.
The brochure,
yeah. Yeah. They started this, the Bureau of Land Management started it. There is a stamp. You know, the National Trails has that passport program?
Yeah, the Park Service passport thing.
They've also started that for the trail.
Oh, okay.
And they could get, that's why there's a blank here. They can get a stamp down to, at the Kenai Fjords building saying mile zero. They go by the trail miles. This is where you get mile zero. I think there's 20 of them all the way up to Nome.
Oh.
So this, that's a part of it.
Oh, okay.
I used to, when I always get it, I said, now you got to be honest. You got to walk the trail. But I think most of them get the thing, go down, say, would you stamp this?
Oh, cool.
So that's another little incentive.
That's a good way to get a little public attention.
Yeah. The ITAC program has helped too. But once something gets embedded in people's minds, it's very hard to unembed it, you know. The race people also, they know that it was the, not the serum run, it was the all the scripture. I mean, they know that, and they keep saying that.
Right.
And I don't know, have you seen a book, The First 10 Years?
No.
It's a book put out by some of the original, I did around
it.
Nice, big, thick, beautiful book. And they have a whole section. It is based on the All-Alaska Sweepstakes.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it isn't something that isn't constantly. The race people keep saying it. We keep saying it. But, you know, things get stuck in people's minds, and it's hard to change it.
Right.
That's one of our... We just keep plugging away.
Are there things you think the Alliance has been successful at?
Well, I call it the easement project was good.
Okay.
And the ITREC, it's kept going. They're doing it Bureau now, and actually they may, they instead of a class, actual in-person classes, they're doing webinars.
Yeah.
So that could expand, you know, much further.
Yeah.
Although it was nice. They had three meetings together. First they would meet in Anchorage to get organized. Then they met here in the fall. Mm-hmm. And Dan and I always talked to them and took them around. And then they had a meeting in the spring in Nome,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that hasn't happened for a couple of years. So they would get an idea of the difference. There have been a lot of projects, in Anchorage a lot of projects, not always with the trail, but I mean, they revived, one school they revived the park that was sort of deserted, got that going and got that active. Rod Perry, who's an old musher, went to an elementary school there in Anchorage, how to build a tripod. They built it in 19... I don't know how I got the principal to go along with this, but, you know, with all just tools of 1910.
Oh, cool.
And they built one and donated to the... I did Rod Race headquarters, out there. So, I mean, there's all kind of... And we had the Shepherd Creek project here to clean up the creek and get people along it to promise to keep it clean. And a sign put up by the bridge over it, Scheffler Creek. Right. Why? Who is Scheffler? Who's a homesteader here? And there are many others around. A lot of them. One of a really big project on Wasilla. They did a.
Oh, what's that?
That it's not the noon or that they must.
Is that an emergency alarm? Didn't sound like a fire truck or anything.
No. Somebody must have made a mistake.
It's not the tsunami warning.
They come
system.
On with a voice.
Okay.
In Wasilla, they built a miniature Iditarod Trail from... it ends at their museum. And all along, they have a sign. Okay. At this point, you would be at mile so-and-so. At this point, it was by my... So when you walk, I think it's a mile or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a recreation of the Iditarod Trail with signs along telling you where you would be.
Yeah.
That was an
ITREC project?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And again, they stress to get the community involved.
Right.
And a lot of people donated shrubbery for the thing, you know, and people donated sign money, gave money to get the signs up.
Cool.
So they do. And that's like, you know, the here, they got the grade school down. That was
right.
An iTrack teacher. So you got to get the kids involved. That's right. Our purpose. And
well, that one in Wasilla you just said reminds me of those walks people do with the solar system. And they put up where the different planets would be. And it's the mileage equivalent of billions of things. And
yeah.
That's a great idea for the Iditarod.
Yeah. No, it is. So, I mean, there are, and then, of course, now here, you know, we have our statues. But each statue has an interpretive sign, which if people take the time to read it,
right.
says the history. You know,
right.
Both the Pioneer and then the Water one. Elford, if we get that up, it would be the same. So we keep, and we have the pamphlet and the Alliance. We keep, all you can do is just keep trying.
Yeah.
And I think we've convinced some people, anyway, it's along the line.
Are there things that you would like to see the Alliance do in the future, or that you wish they have done and haven't?
I'll be honest. As I said, I think that Eastman Project and the iTrack Project have been very positive. I think another little project that's coming, it will be out soon, is a children's book. You know, the Forest Service has a child guide.
Oh.
Child Ranger.
Like Junior Ranger.
Junior Ranger.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to do the same thing for the Iditarod. We've hired a woman. We've gone through it several times with criticism and so on. That should be out soon.
And that's an Alliance project?
That's an Alliance project. So there'll be a junior, I'm not sure what they're going to call them, but a junior Iditarod or something.
Yeah.
And it's been well done. It's a lady who has been involved in that sort of thing. Outside, and she is. It's just well. They sent it to us. All the Alliance, if we can make corrections, which I could.
Yes.
Come some of the things about Stuart. It always bugs me, you know. He was talking about how it got started, you know, the railroad. Blaine chose Seward as a starting point. Well, he didn't choose Seward. There was no Seward here. He chose Resurrection Bay as the start for the railroad, and he founded the city of Seward.
Right.
And ran into one problem. When he asked for a post office, they wouldn't give him one because there was a Seward down in southeast and one on Bristol Bay, a mining camp and a fish camp. Right. Blaine was a big in Republican politics down in Washington State. He contacted President Theodore Roosevelt and said, "This city I'm founding is going to be the metropolis of the Pacific. It deserves the name." And Roosevelt said, "Put that in writing and bring it back." And he did. Roosevelt wrote on it, "I agree with Mr. Blaine, T.R. He said, "Take this to the post office." He took it to the post office and we had the Seward Post Office.
Well, it was a good thing he named it Seward, that he didn't want to call it Blaine after himself.
Oh, no, he never. So it was a professor, I think, down in Seattle came. One name, I can't think of now. It was sort of a combination of Alaska and Gate. There were some weird names. But it was a professor down in Seattle. We said, name it in honor of William H. Seward.
Yeah.
And he did.
Cool.
There is a bust of Seward there by the First National Bank. That was another centennial project.
Uh-huh.
Well, a Seward centennial project in 2003.
Now, Dan mentioned that you and he have given this sort of presentation around. He called it the Dog and Pony Show. Can you talk about that?
Well, basically, we did, you know, for iTrack, and we did, I know, Hope, Girdwood, others. I've been Anchorage once, too. I have at that time, shows when this got started. It was a slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
You remember slideshows?
Yes, I remember slideshows.
Of the history of the Iditarod Trail. About a half an hour. And then Dan would talk about the race.
Mm-hmm.
And we would answer questions about it. And promote the both our own and the Alliance. And at most of the places, we also push that they'd be nice if that, like Gerd would organize a trailblazer and so on. So we always did it for the ITREC meeting up in Anchorage, the first one. Eventually, it became a PowerPoint.
Right.
I do keep up with some things.
Well, I was going to say, yes, you do have a computer.
And another good thing, and educational, Dan suggested it. It came out of our Seward Centennial. We hired someone to do a video of the history of Seward.
Mm-hmm.
Did an excellent job. Dan said, why don't we hire him to do a history of the Iditarod Trail, a video.
Mm-hmm.
And they agreed. And we did. To sell, and here in Seward, last summer not, but ever this summer and past summers, they show it at the library.
Okay.
The Library Association put together one on the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So they're both showing the history of the Iditarod Trail, which is basically what we had done.
Right.
And the history of the earthquake. Because it's city property, the library is city property now, and the people in the library, city employees, city ordinance say that if there is a money-raising project in a city building by city employees, all the money goes into the general fund. So, but they have been willing to turn a blind eye if we ask for donations.
Okay.
So we ask for donations, and it is split between, well, during the week, the library shows it. So the library gets a third of the money. We get a third. The Alliance gets a third of the money. And the Library Association gets a third of the money. Because
mm-hmm.
they own the rights to the earthquake one.
Right.
Sunday, the Resurrection Bay Historical Society shows it. And again, it's split.
Right.
But instead of the Library Association, instead of the library, the Historical Society gets that third.
Right.
We have done, even this year, we made a little over, I think around $1,200, our cut.
Right.
Usually it's been more than that.
That's
so that is something which is seen by a lot of people. They do keep track, I don't have the figures here, they do keep track of how many. It's several thousand every year. So those people at least get the information that this, the history of the trail.
Yeah, well, I've seen that video.
Yeah.
And you're in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've seen that, and I wondered who the audience was for that video and the distribution of it.
Well, it is sold. We sell it at the museum, and the Alliance, as they call them, pop-up meetings, anything like the set-off for the race, you know, at Wasilla,
mm-hmm.
they have tables.
Okay.
People are set. We peddle it there. We have it on our website to buy. We sold them at when we had our Trail Days meetings at the Pavilion. We sold them here at Seward, people. I don't know how many we have left. I don't have any left here. I sold the last of them to the Resurrection Bay Historical Society to sell at the museum. But I mean, I know there's still many up in Anchorage or something. But it's sold. And given away to.
So you feel that was a good project?
Oh, it was. Okay. I think it was an excellent project. It has gotten, you know, I mean, just in Seward, I can't remember how many years we've been showing it, but literally thousands of people have seen it.
Right.
And hopefully have learned something about it.
Right.
It is very popular, very popular. I have been stopped on the trail.
Oh.
Weren't you in that?
Oh, right. Well, you're famous now. Yeah. I'm just looking through my questions here if there's anything else that I specifically wanted to ask you. A lot of it's about the council, which you weren't involved
with.
No,
I had nothing to do with that.
And the Alliance does the Alliance have anything to do with decisions about how the trail is managed, like what BLM does in terms of giving permits or things like that?
No, not really. No, that it is the BLM is the federal government in charge, the federal agency that is in charge. As I said, we have given them money. Well, we haven't given them money. We've given money to the race people to do work, And sometimes there are things that the federal government cannot do, but if they give the alliance money, the alliance can do it.
Right.
You know, so we work well together. We do. We really have, over the years, developed a good relationship there between all three of the groups, really. Mm-hmm. The Bureau of Land Management, the Alliance, and the race people.
Uh-huh. And have you been involved in any of those creating partnerships?
No, to be honest, no. I mean, I went to the board meetings where we talked with the management, but first of all, we have no say in the Bureau of Land Management. Right. They decide what they're going to do, and that's it. I mean, you can suggest, but you can't,
right?
You know. They're always open to suggestions. We're very cooperative. I have no complaint whatsoever about them.
Good.
I know it's all Alaskans like to complain about the federal government. It's sort of a standard thing, but they have done an excellent job. I have no complaints.
Oh, good. Something else I just saw here. I was going to ask you about.
Oh, yeah, I just thought of something.
Go ahead.
You know, when they have, in Anchorage, they always have a thing at the Science Center when the race people, they have a, they start, you know, the race still has a symbolic start downtown.
Right, right.
And they end up there at the center. And they
Campbell
always,
Creek.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And they have refreshments and so on. We always have a table there. The Bureau of Land Management cannot buy refreshments. Alliance buys the refreshments that are out there. So it's things like that. I mean, it sounds, you know, maybe a little silly, but it's just one example of we do what the other one can't do.
Right. Oh, I know. So are you a bit of a liaison between the Seward Trailblazers and the Alliance? Because you're in both groups?
Well, so is Dan.
Oh, yeah.
So we both are. And we have a third member down here, John Sewell, who is vice president, lives in Seward.
Vice president of?
Of the Alliance.
Okay.
So we have three members.
Wow, that's a lot from the Seward.
Well, one has to be. There is a Kenai representative. And then there's an at-large. And those two are large members.
Oh.
And the large members can come from anywhere. That was brought up, but we said, you know, why not?
Yeah, and to be members of the Alliance, do you have to be from a community along the trail?
Oh, no.
So somebody from Fairbanks.
Anyone can join.
No, to be a member, but to be on the board?
There are, as I said, at-large seats.
Okay.
So anyone, Skagway could have a member on, Juno could have a member on it, and so, an enlarged membership.
And so how do you get onto the board? I mean, you were approached.
Yeah, well, this is still, we say, is there anybody, if someone's leaving, like Jonathan got on, someone had left the state, they needed a person, they said, well, Jonathan would be a good one. We nominated him. And actually, there was an election. Leo Rasmussen nominated somebody from up in the Fairbanks area. And Jonathan, I don't know why, but Jonathan won, and that was it. When there's a vacancy, you ask. It is sometimes a problem in the village up north. In Caltag, we've been having some problems with finding people. That's a problem of all statewide groups. It's a big state.
Yeah.
It's a big state. And it isn't always easy to get from one place to another.
Right. And so that creates a problem for getting people involved?
Yeah. We do have now virtual meetings. Well, we've always had that.
Right.
We always had a monthly virtual meeting.
Okay.
You know, on telephone and so on. So people could always stay in contact. We did have an annual meeting. Most people could get down once a year.
That would be in Anchorage.
Yeah, that was always in Anchorage. We for a while had a spring meeting, once in Seward, once in Wasilla. But again, that we didn't have all that much money. That's another limiting factor.
Yeah. So how do you get somebody in, like Caltag? You want somebody from Caltag, from McGrath, from Unalakleet?
Yeah, well, a lot of times again, that is where people involved in the race can be very helpful. So-and-so. Oh, you should contact so-and-so in Caltech. They're really into that. I know that's when McGrath, we got a guy who's, he wasn't a racer, but he was, you know, always helped out the racers as they go through.
Well, and as we know, in small towns, people are stretched pretty thin.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's hard to get people.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And it's always not easy. You know, they've had trouble there at McGrath on airplanes and getting in and out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It is. It's not always easy to get from one place to another in Alaska.
No, it is not.
A car rental agency told me, they were down here, and they said, a guy was in the other day. He wanted to know how long it would take to drive to Nome.
From here?
Yeah.
A few years?
Said, well, it'll take a few years. They got to build a road first.
Building the road to Nome concept that's been thrown around for a long time, has that ever been a problem for the historic trail?
It could have been, but it hasn't because they've never done it.
They haven't gotten far enough?
No. I mean, it is the logical way to get there.
Yes. Well, a railroad.
Yeah. Well, there was actually talk of a railroad.
I know. Right? That's why I'm saying that there's been talk about those things, and it just occurred to me when you mentioned it that, route would they go? Well, maybe they'd go on the trail.
Well, that's why the easements on the trail would probably protect it.
Okay.
I don't know, but, you know, I don't think that's going to happen too soon.
No. It just, it's an interesting...
I know, it's...
So I guess the other, one of my last questions is, have there been challenges to, besides the myth thing, which we know is a big challenge, but other, boots on the ground, getting things done, obstacles or frustrations?
Well, it's like that. It's something you just said. Most of the places are pretty small. I admit myself, a lot of things I didn't do because I was interested in the museum.
Right.
And the museum came first. And other people, some people are trying to make a living. And there are things, it is sometimes a problem getting people together to do something.
Right.
This is, it's just the way it is. When they can, they do.
Yeah. And like those shelter cabins, there's one out of McGrath and now
White
Mountain.
Those are vitally important out there.
Right.
I mean, because people are using those trails all year.
And those cabins, were the ideas for those, did that come from the Alliance or did the idea come from the community?
There were trails there, but there were cabins, a lot of them had been established in the old days. They just needed repair and maintenance. That's something, most of that's on state land. Bureau of Land Management can't do anything.
Right, but the Alliance has gotten involved.
They've given money. What they try to do is get a local group in response.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the McGrath Trailblazers came in. We'll give you the money. Bureau of Land Management can fly in supplies. You build it, you do the work, and you maintain it.
But the idea for that cabin needing to be fixed came from somebody in McGrath.
Well, McGrath and the BLM. BLM checks all these cabins along the way, and they try those on their land they can take care of.
Right.
Those on state land, state, of course, money again comes up. But the Alliance gets money, a grant from the BLM every year. Some of it can only be used for some purposes. Some is open to anything. And we've cooperative agreement. We'll give you the money. You build it and promise to maintain it.
Right. And that's the same with the White Mountain
one. Yeah.
And the same with that White Mountain one. Did the idea for that come from White Mountain?
Yeah, because theirs was completely. In fact, they're going to start from scratch.
Yeah.
And they have come up with a great plan. And again, you're running the problem of getting materials there.
Right.
But there again, race people have agreements with some airlines, and they don't always use... They buy a lot of time, and sometimes they have time left over, and they're willing to donate that. And they're willing, in this case, maybe to help get some supplies to White Mountain.
Yeah, well, yeah, this whole alliance and the trail project, it just shows, to me, the importance of individual people being passionate and working really hard for a long time.
Yes.
And being creative and networking and partnering and joining forces to accomplish something. Patience.
We just keep plugging away. And sometimes you think, if you bother them enough, they say, oh, hell, let's just do it. And then they'll shut up.
Well, and that somebody like you and Dan as well been involved for so long that you haven't gotten frustrated and given up.
Oh, no, you can't give up. I mean, this is all along, you know. I admit, you know, but when you look back over it, a lot has been accomplished.
Yeah.
Somebody said, oh, you didn't do that much. But when you were at the beginning, when there was really nothing, complete computer, what do we do?
Right.
And then look at it today, a lot has been done.
And why have you continued? Why didn't you just give up?
Again, maybe I'm too dumb. No, I care about, I like Seward.
Mm-hmm.
And I really got invested in it, in the museum.
Right.
The history. Seward has had an unbelievable history. It's been in the middle of all kind of important.
Right.
Well, you know, the first flight around the world.
Oh.
In the 25, of course, you couldn't go all, you know, they had to stop.
Right.
They stopped here at Seward. There was a second stop. Was here
in
Seward.
Oh, I didn't know that. See?
You know, and other things have happened here. It's always amazing me how many things Seward has been involved in. And the Iditarod is one of the things it was involved in,
right.
Which I did not know. I admit, I had not realized it. And when we started the trail, I realized, and so those two things meshed. I was interested in the history. I still am. I don't really care much about it. I care about the race when there's a, like Dan was in it,
right.
Or Dallas. I had, not Dallas, but Mitch, because mm-hmm. I had Mitch in high school.
Right.
There are people you know, so you're interested. So I'm not that interested in the race itself. I'm interested in the history of the trail. Dan is interested in both.
Right.
So you do what you do, what you're interested in, what you want done, and basically most of these things mesh.
Right. Do you think it's important for people in other parts of the state to know about the history of the Iditarod Trail?
Well, it's as important as anything, that any big event. Most people, I'm sure, have heard of the Iditarod Gold Strike. One thing I think a lot of people don't, John Beaton's buried up in the Anchorage Cemetery.
Who's John Beaton?
One of the two men who discovered gold in Iditarod.
Oh, okay.
Dyckman was unusual. He sold out early, and unlike so many, he did not waste his money. He was very fortunate. He died down in Nebraska. He had bought a ranch in Nebraska. He died down there in the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, why should Alaskans who don't live along the trail care about it being a historic trail?
But it's a part of the history of Alaska. Like you say, why should you care about the Chilkoot?
Right.
You know? Well, it's a part of the history.
Okay.
Why do you care about the Klondike? Well, they went through. Why do you care about Skagway? Why do you care about... Well, we don't. Yeah. I was...
So, yeah, it's caring about history of where you live.
Yeah, well, that is... Of course, that's the ITREK program is built on that project, that get the young people interested, so when they are the old people, they're going to keep it. Say, we can't. I remember when I was a kid, we worked on that. You can't destroy that. That's a part of our history.
Yeah. And that is, you know, stewardship.
Oh, it is.
It's a hard thing to...
Stewardship is hard. But if you... The trail here, as I said, it was somewhat opposite, but look out the window and they're walking.
Right.
And people, dogs are a great thing. People are walking their dogs. But I do a survey in the summer. It's unbelievable. You know, I think half-hour periods, you know, 60, 70 people. On a real good day, over 100 people.
Wow.
On a rainy day, one or two. But it is constantly used. Biking has really taken off.
Yeah.
Scooters are back. Kids going on their scooters, skateboards.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-motorized.
But it's paved so that...
Yeah, people in wheelchairs. It's handicap accessible.
Strollers.
Strollers are very... But you got to be... I learned you got to be careful. There's not always kids in them. Some people have their dogs in them. But wheelchairs.
Yeah.
It is handicapped access. You can get on there.
Right.
And you can... I've seen them. They take their wheelchair all up. There's one little gentle hill. Not a hill. It's a slope.
Yeah.
So there's no problem there.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have Well, that's that you feel good about having been involved in this trail effort for so long.
Yeah.
It's meant a lot to you.
Every time, I almost every day walk on the trail. It's 30 years old now.
Wow.
The paved.
The paved part.
Yeah, 30 years last month.
Well, but you've been involved in the Alliance since the 90s.
Well, yeah, right? I know, but I mean, you know, that was one of our first real
for the successes. Trailblazers, yeah.
And it has become very popular, the guy walking his dog. It's become very, very popular.
Yeah, well, I can tell from talking to you, you seem very passionate about the history of the trail and all these efforts.
We're always pushing Seward. I admit I'm on the Seward angle.
Yeah, that's okay.
But that's why we're trying to get people all up and down the trail.
Right. Yeah, and now...
Nome, there are people really passionate up there.
Yeah, and the Southern Trek section being all connected, that must feel good to
see it's
that
unbelievable
happening.
When you look back. That is really unbelievable.
Yeah. Big accomplishment.